Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. And did you know that Finland is once more the world's happiest country? Finland was voted the happiest country in the world for the fifth straight year. And it is joined by other European countries in the annual World Happiness Report. The 10th edition of this report, which is a publication of the United Nations Sustainable Development Solutions Network, ranked 146 countries in their overall happiness. Researchers of the topic say that past data was looked at, how citizens' trust in government was, did they trust their large institutions? And they found that these played a major factor in a country's level of happiness. The World Happiness Report, then, is changing the conversation about progress and well-being. It provides important snapshots of how people around the world feel about the overall quality of their lives. And using the results from the Gallup World Poll, Finland was in first place. It had an overall score of 7.8 out of 10, which was significantly ahead of all other countries. Northern Europe appeared to be one of the happiest regions in all the world, because all five Nordic countries, Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, and Norway, ranked in the top eight. And you will say, oh, then we must be in the next one or two ranks. Wrong. The top 10 countries and their score are the following. Finland had a 7.8, and Denmark a 7.6, Iceland a 7.5. Number four was Switzerland, 7.5, the Netherlands, 7.4, as did Luxembourg, little tiny Luxembourg, 7.4. Sweden checked in at 7.3, as did Norway and Israel, and rounding out the top 10 happiest countries was New Zealand at a 7.2 out of 10. Sorry, couldn't put us in there. We didn't come in until later down the list, and we're behind Canada and Great Britain at that. Maybe more about this at a later time. So we'll take a short break for a moment or two, and you enjoy the music from this wonderful day. Let's reach into the past for words about Russia. News stories about the Russian invasion of Ukraine have been filled with terms that hark back to the Cold War and even earlier conflicts that were fueled by the great powers expressing nationalism. On March the 2nd, in the Christian Science Monitor newspaper, there was a description of how the invasion is dividing Europe between your NATO on the one hand and a revanchist Moscow on the other. The Washington Post referred to Russia's Potemkin Village armed forces, while The Economist warned that Vladimir Putin's violent irredentism has ushered in a post-Cold War period. Just what do these words mean? Revanchist comes from the French word revanche, which is French for revenge. But in English, it has a very particular sense. A revanchist is someone who advocates or fights for the recovery of lost territory or status. That, according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the Oxford English Dictionary defines its adjective form, revanchist speeches. For example, it calls those belligerently vengeful. According to political scientist Ivan Krastev, revanchism is not a constructive ideology. It is driven by the idea of payback. A dream not of changing the world, but of changing places with the victors of the last war. Revanchist was first applied to the French, who couldn't accept the 1871 loss of Alsace-Lorraine to Germany after the Franco-Prussian War. Around the same time, a series of wars and alliances resulted in the unification of Italy and gave us the word irredentism. Some Italians looked at the numerous Italian-speaking regions that were still outside the borders of Italy and wanted to annex this terra irredenta, or unredeemed land. Today, irredentism is a national policy that advocates the acquisition of some region in another country by reason of common linguistic, cultural, historical, ethnic, or perhaps racial ties. And these words are often used interchangeably, but to be precise, irredentist nations interest themselves in lands whose people share their language and their culture, whether or not they have been historically united. Revanchists focus less on who was living in a disputed territory and more on the fact that it was lost. Well, back in 1787, Catherine the Great toured Crimea, which Russia had recently annexed. Its governor general wanted to impress his Tsarina with the prosperity of her new territory, and so, as the story goes, he had pasteboard facades of buildings erected and brought in serfs and farm produce in order to portray a well-fed peasantry. His name was Gregory Potemkin, and according to his critics, he had created Potemkin villages to fool the empress. Historians now doubt whether he went to such lengths of deception, but this term still caught on, and a Potemkin village is yet defined as an impressive facade or show designed to hide an undesirable fact or condition. And you see, these words from the past have now come back to us and are used again. I'll be right back shortly. Let's explore a few different paths to home ownership. These are innovative ways to buy a house. There are a few places today where Americans are feeling inflation rates as acutely as the U.S. housing market. From December 2020 to December 2021, the median price of a home shot up by nearly $50,000. There are lots of reasons for this uptick, but one major factor is the nationwide shortage of affordable housing, a problem that's born of exclusionary local land use rules, a slump in new construction because of supply chain issues and labor shortages, and the COVID-19, which drove a surge in demand among newly remote workers. Well, it's more than just a housing problem, since home ownership is the best way to accrue wealth over a lifetime. It's a prosperity issue as well. U.S. homeowners have, on the average, 40 times as much wealth as renters, according to the Federal Reserve Bank. As traditional routes to home ownership become closed off, here are six possible ways that communities and companies are helping people buy a home. One of these is reparations for Black families, whereby the program sets aside $10 million in revenue raised by the city's tax on recreational marijuana over a decade. And the first $400,000 from that reserve goes to victims of racial housing discrimination and their descendants. Another innovative way to follow a path into home ownership is community land trusts. Let's call that by its capital letters of CLT. In other words, buy the home, but not the ground that it's on. There are more than 12,000 CLT homes nationwide, spread among roughly 220 communities. And while the rules of each community vary, the idea that animates them is the same. The community owns the land that the homes sit on. Aspiring homeowners share the cost of purchasing a house with the community. And when homeowners sell, they return a share of the appreciation of the community, which is used to maintain affordable housing stock. And then there's this pathway to home ownership, and that is changing zoning rules so that developers can build. In other words, this example from Minneapolis. The Minneapolis City Council did away with single-family zoning ordinances in 70% of the city's residential land. Proponents say the change could triple housing supply in some Minneapolis neighborhoods by triggering the construction of more cost-efficient multifamily units. In the years since Minneapolis reform, Portland, Oregon, and the state of California have followed suit. It's going to be interesting to see how this affects home ownership. And then a fourth pathway to home ownership is 3D printed home construction. In 2017, the company Icon, I-C-O-N, was founded. It's a construction company which has created a technology that 3D prints structurally sound, environmentally resilient, single-family homes. The 3D building method, according to market research, can reduce construction waste compared with traditional building models by as much as 60%. And then a fifth pathway to home ownership is to build homes like Henry Ford built cars. Build houses the way Henry built cars. In a factory, workers complete most components of a house, the siding, the flooring, and the walls at scale, then attach them to a foundation on site at a later date. Final features like garages and porches are added once the home is in place. Sounds curious, doesn't it? And finally, there's a new approach to rent to own. In 2017, a company called Divvy Homes was started, and it offers prospective home buyers access to essentially the same mechanism, only instead of paying back the owner, the buyer buys back Divvy. The company purchases homes on the open market and covers the closing costs, the taxes, insurance, and repairs. The client, in turn, pays monthly rent that is approximately 10 to 25% pricier than a comparable unit. The difference goes toward equity in the home. The client can buy back the home with accrued equity or cash it out at the end of the lease. And so if you care to know more about this or any of these innovative pathways to home ownership, you can Google them. All that I mentioned, rent to own, Ford built homes like Ford built cars, 3D printed home construction, changed zoning rules, community land trusts, and finally, reparations for Black families. I'll be right back after you enjoy this music. I'm sorry I have to end today's program with some distressing news, and that is the Amazon rainforest is approaching a crucial tipping point that could see it permanently transformed into a grassy savanna. This, according to the latest data available. Home to a vast and unique array of plant and animal life, the dense tropical forest also acts as a massive carbon sink. Because its trees evaporate significant amounts of water into the atmosphere, its loss could affect global weather patterns. Scientists have examined satellite data from the past 20 years, and they have concluded that about 3/4 of the rainforest is displaying signs of what they call resilience loss, meaning it is less able to recover from things like droughts and logging and forest fires. And the decline has been greatest in those areas that were nearer human activity and received less rainfall. That the future is not bright for the Amazon is a sad, sad thing to talk about. And it could happen in the space of decades. And then, maybe a little bit brighter news than that. Stonehenge may have actually been a real calendar. It has long been thought that Stonehenge in southwest England was used only to track the winter and summer solstices and not the days and months of the year. But new research indicates that the imposing prehistoric monument may also have served as a solar calendar. Great news, and maybe more about that in the near future. And so, my friends, we're getting close to the end, and I'm going to give you, on the way out, a little wit and wisdom, a few quotations that you can carry with you for the rest of the week. According to Jonathan Swift, is quoted in the Washington Post, falsehood flies and truth comes limping after it. And Thomas Otway, the playwright, has said, ambition is a lust that is never quenched, but grows more inflamed and madder by enjoyment. And then, Hollywood is the one place on earth where you could die of encouragement. Dorothy Parker said that some years ago. And George L. Orwell said this, if thought corrupts language, language can also corrupt thought. A bad usage can spread by tradition and imitation, even among people who should and do know better. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of today's program. I want you to stay safe, take care of yourself, be kind to others. They'll be very surprised. And now it's time to go down the road again, looking for more items to talk to you about next week. So my friend Willie Nelson's here to give me a lift. And he's going to take us down the road again. As we end today's program, you have a good week, a good weekend, and we'll see you soon. Remember, tune in 101.5 on your FM dial. We've got a little of this and a little of that waiting for you to inform, to entertain and amuse you. Willie, take us home.